Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rota. We're here today with Katie Workman, the author of the Mom 100 cookbook, as well as the new cookbook, Dinner Solved, 100 ingenious recipes that make the whole family happy, including you. Katie's joining us today to talk about her pretty ingenious fork in the road technique and her tips for getting dinner on the table every night. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start first with the fork in the road technique, because I think it's such a unique thing that you've come up with and a really smart way to approach feeding a mixed crowd.
So the idea behind fork in the road is that you can make a recipe up to a single point and then separate it. So part of the recipe can get spiced up and part of it can stay mild. Part of it can become vegetarian and part of it goes on to be meaty. Part of it can be more robustly flavored for more adventurous eaters at your table. And part of it can stay on the simple side if you've got a pickier eater. And the cook is just making one dish, one recipe. Multiple versions. Everyone's eating the same thing at dinner, and the person at the stove doesn't feel like a short order cook.
I love that because it addresses not only the issue of trying to make one meal for kids that might be at different levels of pickiness, but also addresses different dietary needs, nutritional considerations that people might have when they come to eat the same meal together.
Exactly. Like there's a chili, for instance, where you make the chili base and add in all sorts of vegetables and beans, and then you can separate it into two pots, and one pot might get some chicken or chicken sausage added, and then you've got your chicken vegetable chili, and the other one might get some additional vegetables and another can of chickpeas, and then it's a vegetarian chili. So your whole family can have chili, or if you're cooking for a crowd and entertaining, which so many of us are, and I'm always entertaining with chili, this is an example, and that way you're not making two different chili recipes. You're making one, but you can make two versions and give everyone what they want.
How do you recommend that parents involve kids of all different ages in the dinner-making process and get them to take some ownership over it? I think the goal is sort of to equip kids with the ability to feed themselves well for a lifetime, and how do you accomplish that?
Yep, that is the goal, and unfortunately, it's become something that people are very nervous about or are very uncomfortable with because they may not be so comfortable in the kitchen themselves, and that's first and foremost why I put what the kids can do with every recipe, and both the books has a what the kids can do element to it. So obviously every kid's at a different level. Only you know if your kid's ready to have a sharp knife or be near the stove. And that can range, a 7-year-old can be working a sharp knife and a 12-year-old maybe has never made a can of tuna fish before. So you have to judge your own kid and supervise. But when kids are involved in cooking, obviously they are more inclined to try something because they've had a hand in making it. There's that pride of ownership thing. And, of course, there's all those great life skills besides, a lifetime of healthy eating and knowing how to put dinner on the table. There's math, there's reading, there's organization, there's ordering events, there's cooperation. There's so many amazing things that happen when you're cooking in the kitchen. And then the thing that I think that gets maybe overlooked a little bit is the idea of giving your kids choice in the matter. Because if you say to your kid, okay, hey, this recipe says season to taste, what do you think that means? You add salt until you think it's the right amount of salt, or this says 1 to 2 tablespoons of chili powder. Why don't you decide how much chili powder you think this recipe needs? Or maybe you're making, pita toasts, and you say, why don't you poke around the spice jar and see if you find something, the spice that you've always wanted to try or you think smells good. And then it's very empowering to be able to make these choices and these decisions. So it's not just about getting your hands dirty and being the person executed. It's about, kids don't have all that many choices in their lives. And this is a good one.
So it's not only about giving kids that ownership and those jobs, but also maybe learning to take a little bit of a step back as the primary cook, have a little bit of an ability to delegate.
Yep, delegate and watch somebody mess up, I have a very, very distinct memory of the first time my younger son decided he would like to see what happened if you inverted the proportions of baking soda and flour in a muffin recipe. And it sucked. It was horrible. And I could have told him that it was going to suck and be horrible, but it was a much more impactful thing for him to figure it out himself and then to sort of look it up and have the discussion of what the role of the different ingredients is and just to sort of understand that, more isn't always better, and also that if something says cook at 350 for half an hour, cooking at 500 for 20 minutes is not necessarily going to yield you the same results. Maybe it will. Maybe it'll yield you better results. Maybe you'll get crispier roasted vegetables, but maybe there's failure, and that's good. Trial and error, that's good.
So there are days when you might have time and energy and inclination to experiment. Yes. And then there are days when you just have to get dinner on the table. What are some of your go-to strategies, techniques, recipes for those days when it's been a long day, everyone's tired, you just have to have something to eat?
Yes. Like, I know you're a creative person, but get out of my way. Well, first of all, I'm always yammering on about prepping your week. I love the idea of, you know, taking a little bit of time, maybe Sunday afternoon, get out the food processor or cutting board and a knife, mince up some onions, zest and juice some lemons, mince up some shallots and some garlic, and, you know, chop up some parsley, ingredients that you know you're going to use throughout the week. And put those in little containers, stick them in the fridge, because later when you get home Monday at 6 from work or from picking your kids up or whatever you're doing, and it's time to start dinner, you have a little head start on it. And you know that, that when that recipe says mince 2 cloves of garlic, you're not going to collapse on the floor in a heap. Crying, weeping.
What are some ingredients you get excited about that are in season this time of year, and what are your favorite things to do with them?
Well, it's funny because this is like, it's like still September, you know, so, you know, you're clinging to the last days of, you know, tomatoes and corn. But I love winter squashes. So those are starting to come in. And, you know, it's a really good time, actually. You're still like in a pretty robust harvesty time. And it's funny because I feel like every day the weather, you don't know what end of September, October weather is, right? I mean, you could have an 80 degree day and you could have a 60 degree day. So sometimes if you think, oh, I'm going to make chili on Wednesday, and Wednesday turns out to be 82 degrees, you know, it's a very fluctuating time of year. So, but I love one dish things for, you know, weeknights. I love cooking things and, you know, one skillet items, and also using a sheet pan to put, you know, I roast things in sheet pans more often than I do in casseroles. I love the getting, you know, sort of the air moving around it more and getting more caramelization, more exposure to the inside of the oven.
So can you give us some examples of a few of the recipes in Dinner Solved that have the fork in the road technique and what that looks like?
Sure. Actually, all the recipes in the book have the fork in the road technique, so each one can be made in at least more than one version. So the Mexican chicken tortilla soup, which is one of our absolute favorites, it's like a huge family favorite, that one can also be made into a stew. So you could add, you know, you can add more corn, you can add more vegetables, you know, a little bit less broth, and you can add more chicken, and you can really make it into like more of a first course, or you can make it into more of a main meal. And then there's shortcuts and tips too. Like, for instance, in this one, you cut the tortillas into strips and you just pan fry them up in a little bit of oil. But if you don't have time to do that, just grab a handful of tortilla chips and crush them right into the soup. You are totally going to have an amazing soup. And it's just, you know, if that's the thing that's standing between you and dinner, do not let it stand between you and dinner. And there's a recipe for sort of romantically named Stupid Easy Chicken and Pasta, Chicken and Broccoli Pasta. And that really just shows you how you can, you know, swap in chicken, you can swap in shrimp, you can leave the chicken out and have it be purely vegetarian, you can add red pepper flakes to some of the portions, you can switch up the vegetables because maybe there's something else in your fridge or something else that you saw at a farmer's market that you loved. And it's really just about, that is a very much about the flexibility. And you can also add additional ingredients. So maybe you'll take out some of it with the chicken and the broccoli and the pasta and leave it very plain and simple, but then you're going to add roasted tomatoes and, you know, Parmesan cheese to the rest of the pot, so that if, you know, the more adventurous eaters are having something that has more flavor and more sophistication, but the younger eaters or the pickier eaters, or I never even really, it's not necessarily for the pickier eater. Somebody who just wants a simpler dish is going to get that simpler dish.
What I love about this approach is that it really sort of takes away the things that stand between you and making dinner. It's sort of, you know, what's keeping you from making dinner instead of ordering takeout, instead of feeding everyone freezer chicken nuggets, and taking away those excuses by giving you a shortcut and an out and a way to say, okay, we might not have this ingredient, but it's perfectly fine to swap in something else instead. And that flexibility is so important if you're actually going to cook every night.
And the flexibility, and then, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but if you allow yourself the opportunity to sort of to understand that most recipes are just templates. So there's 100 recipes for a pasta dish with a chicken and a broccoli. So the odds are there's more than one way to make it. So if you want more chicken or less chicken, or if you want to use chicken thighs instead of chicken breasts, or if you want to use zucchini instead of broccoli, the odds are that that is an actual recipe somewhere. And people feel like, you know, so wed to recipes. And there's a lot to be said for a well-written recipe, as you and I know very well, that is written by somebody who knows what they're doing as a professional. But if within those parameters, you can encourage someone to experiment and to try to get comfortable with riffing off of something, then that's the thing that makes people feel excited about being in the kitchen, makes them feel like really good about understanding how the ingredients are working together and then, therefore, how they can play with them and make it their own.
We're starting to head towards what is one of my favorite holidays as a cook, and I think for a lot of people, Thanksgiving. What are some of your tips and tricks for painless, fun, delicious holiday entertaining?
Anything that can be made ahead, I think, is an entertainer's best friend, right? I mean, we all... And it's funny because there's also... I remember... You know, there's always like, oh, I'll just do that at the last minute. I'll just do that at the last minute. And then all of a sudden you realize that there's not that many last minutes. there's a reason it's called the last minute.
There's only one.
It's not like, we'll do that at the last hour. We'll do that at the last hour. And all of a sudden, right. And then that's the thing that makes a cook and an entertainer stressed out, right? You're just, and who wants to be frantically, you know, mashing potatoes when the guests are arriving? You know, it's just not where anyone wants to be. So, you know, anything that can be made ahead and reheated, and mashed potatoes is a beautiful reheat dish. They will probably firm up as they sit at room temperature, and especially if you're going from a refrigerator. So make sure you have a lot of extra good milk and cream and some butter, because you're going to want to loosen those things up on the stove. But there is the freshness quality won't go away. Just make sure that you have enough extra cream or whole milk and some butter so that you can get back to the texture that you want as you're reheating it. So that's just like a perfect example. And, you know, butternut squash reheats beautifully. You know, there's anything that you can, you know, plan ahead for, even if it's just mincing things and putting them away in the fridge so that at the end you're not saying, oh my gosh, I forgot I have to have a teaspoon of lemon zest to finish this off. You have it. It's in a little baggie. It's in the fridge. You're ready to go.
I don't even make mashed potatoes anymore. I do the Melissa Clark mashed potato casserole because it can just sit in the fridge and then go in the oven and you don't need the stove. So I think all of those shortcuts are really important. And
you know what? And who cares? Because the truth is, by the time, if you're having a bunch of people over, by the time that whole meal gets on the table and everyone served themselves, you're kind of eating a room temperature meal anyway. Like, the idea of everything piping hot with steam rising off of it, Norman Rockwell-ish, I mean, that's just not happening. You know, by the time you let everybody else eat, first of all, your food's room temperature. So, you know, if everything's slightly warm, that's fine. You're not, you know, and when you go back for seconds and everything's room temperature, is anybody sad? No, nobody's sad. And if your Uncle Irving's sad, tell him to go microwave his plate.
I have an uncle who always microwaves his plate. I think everyone does.
That's so funny. And I actually had an Uncle Irving. So there we go.
So basically, planning ahead, being flexible, making one meal that can go a lot of different directions, and being able to delegate are top skills.
Top skills. And also just really, really knowing that no matter what happens, you're going to get another chance to cook later today or tomorrow or whatever it is. And that, you know, I think we hold ourselves to standards that are, if you're holding yourself to a standard that's so high, you know, I've had so many people say to me, oh my God, I can't get a homemade dinner on the table every night. I'm like, who can? And why should you beat yourself up for that? And why would you not say, I'm going to try to do it once or twice a week? You know, if it stands between you and cooking, period, that's just self-defeating, and it just doesn't feel good.
I think that's really good advice. That's really important. And thank you so much for sharing it with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Check out Katie's new book, Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, Including You. And join us next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.